5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Welcome you into a very special edition of Inside Boxing Live, episode number 300. Dan Cadovio, former world champion Chris Algieri. It's presented by PPV.com. We just witnessed Nyoa Inoue knock out Luis Neri to retain all of his titles at 122 pounds. We will discuss that at length. We'll also get our thoughts on Canelo Alvarez and his win over Jaime Munguia. Turning back the hands of time, a new Canelo, the same Canelo. Can he beat Benavidez? All that and more. Christopher Algieri, how are you as we record this early on Monday morning after watching Nyoa Inoue nearly decapitate Luis Neri? Wowza.
Yeah, Wowza's right. And listen, it's barely 9 a.m. on a Monday morning, the day after Cinco de Mayo. And I've been up for 4 hours already, so it's an interesting start. But I had tacos and I got to watch boxing before 8 a.m., so life is good.
I know that there's a big narrative out there, and our buddy Tim Bradley was even talking about it on the post-fight show, like, man, bring this guy to the States, put him at Dodger Stadium. Doesn't have to happen. Nope. Tokyo Dome, 55,000. He is a commodity over there in Japan. I think it's fun to wake up early. I know not everyone can do it. I think it's fun. I think it's become a tradition for boxing. I think it shows the globality. Is that a word?
Global presence.
I think globality should be a word. I think it shows how big of a sport boxing is. To have Canelo Alvarez and all of Mexico and the entire boxing world on notice on Saturday night, and then knowing Monday morning we're all going to wake up across the other side of the world, there's 55,000 packing into the Tokyo Dome for the first time since Mike Tyson got upset by Buster Douglas. Just shows how global the sport is, how healthy it is. You don't have to have everything come to the U.S. It doesn't revolve around the U.S., the boxing world. It's a global sport. But I digress. This is about Nyoa Inoue. Down in the first round, holy shit moment. Defense has been a little leaky as of late, but that's why he's so great, because I think he takes chances on offense, and he takes chances as a puncher, which makes for fun fights. What was your reaction when he went down in that first round?
Well, even before the knockdown, I was looking at Neri, and I'm like, this guy looks dangerous. He looks big, he looks strong, and he looked dialed in. His ring walk, I always like to look at guys' eyes, look at their face. I mean, he was all business, man, all business. And so a little behind the scenes, Inside Boxing Live here, guys. We got a little text from a friend of ours, and we found out from Carl Moretti that Neri, warming up in the back, just had an air of being light and ready and ready to rock. Very, very different than Stephen Fulton was, apparently, before they fought, who he looked very, very tight and nervous, like he was going to his own funeral. Neri wasn't that guy, man. He came out and he looked physical. He looked strong. And he's always got those looping shots. And he started doing them right away, swinging that left hand. But, man, when he went down, my neighbors are probably mad at me. I yelled. I yelled, and it was, you know, 7:45 in the morning, and I'm screaming in my backyard about some guy getting knocked down from across the world, halfway around the world. I was worried. He looked very hurt, even when he got up, and he was doing good at evading the shots, you know, the follow up barrage from Neri, but he was definitely rocked, and I was curious to see how he was going to be able to deal with that, and not only from a technical standpoint, making that change, keeping that left hand up, not popping his head up in the air. But also from a self-belief perspective. And, man, he answered all my questions. Nyoa Inoue is a rock star.
Absolute rock star. And our friend is an absolute rock star that woke us up. That was Joe Tessitore.
Joey Tess.
He wanted to make sure we were awake. Joe Tess is thinking of the best boxing podcast in the world. He's a big fan of ours. I know he's listening right now. Had an outstanding call. I thought he was on point. I thought Bradley was on point. Had seen some of the things.
Dan, I was on my seat, the edge of my seat the entire time. Obviously, the fight was great, but the call, Joe and Tim were fantastic. And keeping the energy level up was great.
Yeah, it was a really fun fight. When you could trade knockdowns, and you see Inoue down in the first, which is first time in his career, first time that he was outlanded in a round in his last 46 rounds. That was an oh shit moment. That got you awake. If you weren't awake yet, you were certainly awake once you saw Inoue go down. And I'm thinking, damn, there's like a minute left on this round. Neary is dangerous, and he's dangerous early. He talked about how he wanted to end the fight early. He probably knew his best chance was to come out and do that. So for Neary, he's thinking, wow, this might actually happen. We might see another upset inside the Tokyo Dome nearly 34 years later. But in a way, responded really well. He recovered really well. He was smiling at the end of the first round, got his legs back, you know, midway through the second. And then from there on out, he got into that flow state really quickly. And when Naoya Inoue is in a rhythm, it is one of the most beautiful things to watch in the sport today. Athleticism, range, power, speed, defense, you name it, he's got it when he's in that flow state. It was so impressive to see him get into that state and get into that rhythm after the knockdown and do that to Neary, who is a flawed fighter but is a dangerous fighter. Man, all the superlatives, you got to throw them out there. If you're not saying all these things about Naoya Inoue, you're simply a hater at this point. This guy has moved up from 108 pounds. They're talking about him going up to 126 pounds next. They're not even talking about who's next at 122. I know Sam Goodman came into the ring for September. That's another win for Inoue. We're already talking about what's next at 126. You have to just sometimes give these guys their flowers while they have them. We're watching an all-time great. We're watching something special before our eyes, and it's great. It's amazing to watch.
Yeah, Dan, you mentioned the Tokyo Dome and the history of, you know, the last big fight that was there was that major upset. So I couldn't help but think that, you know, when Naoya Inoue was recovering from that knockdown. But then I also thought, so another caveat is Naoya Inoue's brother, Takuma Inoue, fought on the undercard. He got dropped too. Yep. And he got up to win. And I was thinking, I'm like, you know what? Like, I was worried. I'm thinking historically about Buster Douglas and Mike Tyson. And I'm like, man. But then I'm like, you know what? The warrior spirit, which is something that Naoya actually talks about. And this is like you said, you know, he's one of those guys. He makes fights friendly because he puts himself in dangerous positions. He believes in his chin. He believes in his power. He believes in his technique. And he said it once. He goes, Japanese fighters have a warrior spirit. American fighters don't like to get hit. He's willing to be in the pocket, even with a dangerous guy like Neary, even with a guy who he obviously knew could hurt him now. He got cracked, he went down, but still stayed in there at times. He stayed much closer than I expected him to after that. I thought he was going to box smarter. But the technique, you talked about the flow state. It looked like to me that Inoue was being too aggressive, reckless early, that he was just going to blow through Neary. He had seen him get knocked out by Brandon Figueroa to the body. He's like, I'm the best body puncher in the world. I'm going to just walk this guy down and beat him up. Once he got hurt, once he got stunned, he's like, all right, I got to go back to what I always do, which is my left jab. Get my jab, get my timing, get my distance, pop those right hands. He doesn't load up on anything unless he needs to. That first knockdown, when he dropped Neary with that counter left hook, so Neary had a tendency to throw that big looping left hand, and he steps through with his rear leg and puts himself in bad position. Now, I would think, and me, I'm like, I'm going to throw my right hand here. He falls forward, southpaw steps, that right hand's there. No. In a way, being the athlete that he is, sees that adjustment. If you watch that video, he waits till his feet get set, and then he throws a very short check hook. Bang! He did it in the first round as well. Man, that is technique plus athleticism. That is a very special combination because I couldn't do that. I'm an athletic guy. I was a great counter puncher. That wouldn't have been the punch that I would try to land there. And not only did he landed it expertly with power and got the knockdown back. And from then on, the fight completely changed.
Yeah, he landed a few of his knockdowns were really impressive. You're talking about his athleticism. Off the back foot on that first one, yeah, Neary was like a little off balance, but he still went down.
But on the replay, you could see his legs got robbed.
Right.
Yeah, hit with that shot. It still hurt him. Yes, balance shot, but also got hurt.
But to be able to do that off the back foot just shows you that he's got that quick snap in his shots. And then that short left hook. Yep. That short left hand, I think it was the second knockdown. Was so impressive.
It was a double left hook. He threw one hook. It landed well, and then he honed in and found it even better on the next one.
Right. Bam. That short one is just crazy. Like, when I watch him fight, and I've watched a lot of boxing in my day, I see things, and I find myself audibly going, things I've never, not I wouldn't say never seen before, but it's just different. And that's the difference. Like, his punches sound different. His quickness looks different. His athleticism is different. And something I've learned from working with you now for a couple years now is no loading up on his shots.
No.
So that just shows you his technique is just flawless. And he doesn't have to put a lot of power behind that. It reminds me of like a power hitter in baseball. Like when you watch Aaron Judge, he's not up there like, you know, putting everything he could into his swings. It's just a beautiful, fluent swing. And for Inoue, it's just a beautiful, fluent movement on his punches where it doesn't even look like he's really putting anything behind it. And he's dropping fools, man. Not just dropping fools, dropping champions, dropping former champions. 27-0 now, 24 knockouts. 22-0 with 20-plus knockouts in championship fights. He's knocked out 16 of his last 17 opponents from 108 all the way up to 126, unifying, become undisputed. Damn, bro. Just sit back and watch something special. And now what we do in the sport of boxing is, especially when you're dealing with a guy that's an all-time great, is you want to push the envelope. Where will Naoya Inoue go next? Will Naoya Inoue go up to 126 pounds? Is there anything left for him at 122? These are the types of questions that are going to be pushed because that's what you have when you're dealing with greatness.
And no, there's not anything for him to do. The ESPN did a great job. They showed a graphic of the top 122 pounders. He knocked out the next three guys. So, you're going to go deeper down the list just to find guys that aren't as good as the guys that he's already KO'd. That's what you got to do. So, yeah, unfortunately, this is what I used to always hate when I'd win a big fight and they're like, all right, what's next? I'm like, can I breathe, dude? Can I go enjoy myself? No,
you can't.
Of course. What's next? And I know that's a kind of a selfish thing to do, but with Naoya Inoue, I don't know, man. I don't even feel bad about it. you are the star of this sport right now, or one of the major stars of this sport. We are all waiting a bated breath of what's going to happen next and where you're going to go. I couldn't help but think, man, Brandon Figueroa is going to be a really tough out for Inoue. Like that's not a fight where I'm like, yeah, Inoue is definitely going to blast him out. Brandon didn't look good his last fight, but he is good. He's super tough. He's got power. He's big. And we're starting to see now, right? So the first time we've seen Naoya Inoue look human was today. He gets dropped in the first round by a big left hand. Now, at these upper weights, he has to be a perfectly technically timed boxer, like which he is. But listen, there's some flaws. Everybody's human. He's human. He looked human today. You saw some of those flaws come out. The chin up in the air. The left hand, the right hand coming down when he's trying to land that jab. So I think at these heavier weights, we're going to see a more human Inoue, but also we're going to see better fights because he's going to have resistance from these guys. And it's not just going to be him just walking them down and beating them up and getting them out of there like we've seen over recent years, especially at 118 and below. So, I mean, yeah. And just one point on what you're talking about, Dan, not loading up. That last KO shot, it was a left hook, right uppercut combination, and then rolled that right into a straight right hand. None of them looked like they were thrown particularly hard, but the technique on all of them was perfect. And to double up a right hand for a finishing shot, dude, the guy's otherworldly.
It's unbelievable. Just to go back to what's next now, and you know, Sam Goodman comes into the ring. That's who that was. ESPN didn't lower third him. There was barely any mention of who exactly that was. Very nice fighter at 122 pounds. He has wins over Reese Aleem. He's 18-0. He's got some other pretty big wins. I've watched him fight before. He's an Australian fighter with a really, really good motor. Don't expect him to win, obviously. But that seems like it's
but
the next
fight. You
didn't
expect that fight to occur.
No, I think it's going to happen in September.
I mean, because we're at the point now where it's like you want mega fights for him because he's such a big star. It's like
right, and he's 31.
He's going to elevate above titles soon, and he's going to have those super fight opportunities like how Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather did.
Well, we're talking about him moving up to 126, right? But he said, like, I'm not in a rush. I do think that he should do it the right way, and I'm sure you would agree with me here. Like, have a few fights at 122, then go to 126. This will be his third fight at 122 if he fights Sam Goodman. I could be wrong on that, third or fourth tops. Do it that way. Don't just hop up to 126. That's where I think that's 126 is where he will end his career. I don't think 130 is going to be something. He's just not – doesn't have that build. The guys at 130 are huge. He's just 5'5" guy that come up from 108. Could be wrong. There's only one fight at 130. We'll get to that in a second. But 126 for Naoya Inoue is the move, and I do think it will happen soon. There's names like Luis Alberto Lopez, who's under the top-ranked banner.
Yeah, but I don't think he's staying at 26 too much longer.
He's, well, he might say, well, you might when there's a freaking cash
that's a good
cow.
Even Fulton did. That's a great point.
Right. There's Luis Alberto Lopez, who's underneath the top ranked banner. There's Lee Wood. There's Nick Ball. There's Ray Ford. There's Brandon Figueroa, who had a huge body shot knockout win. These are big names. These are fun fights. It's a whole other weight class to conquer. And if he can do what he's been doing at 118, 122, even the lower weights, and he could do that at featherweight, then stamp him. All-time great status. If he could do what he's doing at 126 and knock out guys there as a guy that started his career at 108. But there is some fun names at featherweight. I think that's the move. Don't know if it's going to happen next, but those are some fun fights at 126.
Yeah, and absolutely. I mean, listen, I think it's what you said about all-time. That train's not stopping. And he's on his way, and he's going to be the one of those guys for sure. And if not, if you look at his record already, you could probably say he's an all-time great. But I still think he has a lot more to do. And I think those fights at 126 are going to be really, really appealing, especially from a fan-friendly entertainment side point, because that's the way that Inoue likes to perform. He doesn't like to just win. He doesn't like to just knock you out. He likes to be exciting. You know, and he had mentioned that he was happy that he had an exciting performance. So it just makes him that much more of a fan favorite. But in terms of, you know, what's next, dude, he's 31. That's I talk about the age 33 all the time, because I always say that's where my body started to change. I felt the real difference. And if you look at any it's human physiology. When you look at athletes, 33 is generally when guys are on their downslide. And at the smaller weights, it always seems to be younger, right? So he's 31. How much more of this brilliance do we have? And that's the only reason I push back on you about, you know, not rushing. Because if he spends all this time here at 22 and then he's basically going to have like two fights at 26, and then it's probably a wrap in his career, because there's just, it probably isn't that much left, or at least being the unstoppable monster that he is. You know, I'm just going by the numbers. Yeah, of course, some people are super, super special, and he obviously is special, but he's approaching that time when the body starts to betray you as an athlete. And
yeah.
I'm curious, you know, how fast they are going to move through this division.
Yeah, I hope that's not the case. I mean, he's got 27 fights. I mean, it's not like he's in the, you know, at 31, like, you know, Canelo's what, 33 or 34, and he's got 64 fights, 65 fights.
Yeah.
Different.
But, you know, but you see how fast the Japanese fighters move. You know, Jason Maloney just lost to a guy in his ninth fight. Like, so
right.
Japanese fighters move much quicker than other fighters throughout the world. So, like, the level that Naoya Inoue has been at in those 27, 28 fights, super, super high level, long fights, 12 rounds.
Yeah.
They do 10,
you're
12
right.
rounders.
No, you're right. You're right. He might only have under 30 fights, but you're right. I mean, if he has 20-plus title fights already, in 27 fights, do the math. Like, he was fighting in world title fights,
rounds.
Eighth or ninth fight into his career. I do like that they bring these fighters into the ring. This is now like the fourth or fifth fight in a row where they've brought in the opponent, and like now we know that he's fighting in September. Super important, I think, in boxing to do that. I don't understand why they don't do that more. Bring fighters into the ring.
It's not a new thing fight. Either. This is something historically.
It's like a freaking WWF thing. I never understood if you've got a cash cow like this. Yeah, for Canelo and Mayweather, it was always May, September, that schedule. But that's great. September, boom, get him right back in there. Keep this train rolling. He should beat Sam Goodman. There is a name out there for Naoya Inoue, and it's a super fight at 130 pounds between him and Gervonta Davis. Gervonta Davis, over this weekend, he was in Las Vegas, and he did not deny it. He did not rule it out. Leonard Ellerby did not rule it out. That would, to me, if there's one fight for Inoue to go up to 130, and there's one fight for Gervonta Davis to boil down to 130, Inoue versus Gervonta Davis, I'm not saying it's close to happening. It's a pipe dream. But could you just imagine that if they did that at the Tokyo Dome? Would imagine they did that in Las Vegas? Chew on that, Algeri.
That's massive. I don't know. Like, it seems so far-fetched, even though, like, we're seeing little reminders that, hey, this actually could happen. I mean, can Gervonta make 30? Is he willing to make 30? Is he willing to go to Japan? Because I don't think Naoya Inoue is willing to go to Vegas. And, you know, even for a fight of that magnitude. So, especially if he doesn't have to. You know, he's grown very, very comfortable fighting where he's at. And obviously he's performing the way that he's performing. But I don't know, man. And it seems like Southpaw's giving trouble. Not gonna lie. You know, his last
dude,
fight,
and they're like basically the same age. Like yeah. Inouye's 31, and Davis is 29. They're not like they're separated. Like it would have to happen in the next couple of years. Yeah, Southpaws do give him trouble. Neary's a Southpaw with power. Jonathan Davis has a ton more power.
The only thing that Neary didn't do that was a surprise, he didn't jab at all. And that's actually the punch that gives Inouye the most trouble. He got hit a lot with the Southpaw jab of his last fight, Filipino fighter.
Topales.
Topales landed a ton of Southpaw jabs on Inouye. I was really surprised about it. Neary was just looking for that left hand.
Yeah, Neary wasn't in there for a long time. He was in there for a good time. He wanted to hook and get out of there with maybe a win. And you know what? The longer this goes, I'm going to get splattered. And he did that knockout, that view that Top Rank. Yeah. That view that Top Rank put out of him in the corner. Like, dude, God. That's what's awesome about Inouye as well, is he's scoring knockouts. Like, it's one thing to be the face of boxing in a certain part of the world and be pound for pound number one. He's delivering on so many different ways. Like, you're getting up really early in the morning and you're getting satisfaction. Like, you're getting entertainment value.
Yeah,
I'm
juiced. It's before 10 a.m. and I'm like, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's delivering knockouts, like, time in, time out. Yeah, he went down in the first. Yeah, his defense is slipping a little bit because he's willing to stand in there and trade. But at the end of the day, we're talking about another highlight reel knockout. We're sharing another highlight reel knockout on social media. The guy's legend just keeps growing. We're going really hard with the glazing, as the kids say. That's another slang term that I could have brought up to Canelo. We're glazing right now. But I'm not afraid to do that because I'm not a hater. When someone is that good, we're going to sit here and we're going to talk about greatness, because that's what makes the sport go around.
And I think just to piggyback that sentiment, Dan, in terms of having a very entertaining guy at the top, it's like having a Floyd Mayweather or an Andre Ward with power,
right?
Who's knocking guys out and are making exciting fights and are willing
to
put their nose in. Well, Pacquiao was that guy, and that's why he was so endeared to the fans so early on. But you know, oftentimes you look at the guys that are the pound for pound level, and they're not normally knockout guys. You know, obviously we have Terrence Crawford. We're in the era of him; he knocks everybody out. So we are very lucky in that point that the top 2 pound-for-pound guys in the world are both knockout punchers and both look to do damage and not just get by, and make exciting fights. So I guess, you know, listen, boxing's in a good place, dude. Dan, our jobs are awesome. We are in a prime boxing era at the moment. And I hope people are understanding that, because we're starting to kind of look around and be like, yeah, this is actually a really good time for boxing. And I feel like it's never really been that way. Or hasn't been that way in a very long time.
No, this is we're in fight season, number one. Number two, I think it's an amazing thing. The last 48 hours, we got to watch Canelo Alvarez, who was arguably top 4, top 5 on the pound-for-pound list, go out there and put on an excellent performance, remind everyone who he is, and still show you that, you know what, I'm damn good, all-time great. 48 hours later, we head over to Japan. We get up nice and early, and we watch Naio Inouye put on another outstanding performance and keep his crazy knockout streak going. This is the beauty of the sport. It's the beauty of
and then in 2 days I get the call Pro Box TV and we get bangers on those cards all the time,
right?
Too.
And then this weekend upcoming we'll be in Australia. We won't be in Australia, but we'll be in Australia watching Kambosos and Lomachenko. The following week you got the 4-belt heavyweight undisputed fight between Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk. It's just nonstop. I obviously better BFB Vol Buzzkill, June 1st, not happening. That was some news that broke.
But it's almost acceptable, Dan, because of all the things that you just said. We have so much good coming on. It's like, how greedy are we going to get?
In years past, like, the schedule was so light that if you lost the fight, it was debilitating. And that's not the case anymore. Because
Dan used to go lock himself in a room, guys, shut off his lights, wouldn't answer his phone if a fight got canceled.
Not far off from that, because when you depend on the sport of boxing for your freaking livelihood, it's damn scary. But I'll tell you what, lately things have been very good. Do people like hearing about our success with the metrics? I think it's kind of cool. Another 10 or 12 million plus views this past weekend in Las Vegas. I don't want to toot my own horn, but why not? I will. Me and Canelo did a video, and it's currently has 5 million views on TikTok of me and him talking slang terms. So another awesome week for everyone. Thank you, everyone that followed along. all week long of our content out in Las Vegas, whether it was the lives that we were doing from Radio Row, whether it's these one-on-one content that I'm doing with fighters, whether it's anything that you've been taking in of ours over the last month. We've been on quite a run, and it's awesome. Like, I love doing this. I know you love doing it too, Chris. I think everyone at home is enjoying it because we're getting such great feedback. It's the one thing I love too. It's like there's no toxicity out there.
That's one of the great things about us doing these trips is we get to come across our listeners, and people always are giving us glowing reports and say they love our show and they tune in, they listen to all of them. That feels really good. So when you guys do that, we appreciate it.
Yeah, it's awesome. So let's get into Canelo. We haven't been able to talk about it. Did put out a little post-fight after that. Canelo Alvarez, a unanimous decision win over Jaime Munguia. Dropped him in the fourth with an unbelievable uppercut. So just remind us that this dude is still one of the most ferocious combination punchers in the sport. I thought he looked outstanding. I thought he looked great. I thought, yeah, he got hit a little bit early on, and he likes to go into this shell when he gets hit, and that could maybe come back to bite him if he fights a Benavidez. But I talked about this, like his second portion of his career, he's just fighting smarter. He just has so much experience. He's so poised. I was never like really worried that he was in any type of trouble through those first four rounds. Then he just, like, to use the stupid term, downloads the data and he figures it out. He's got an unbelievable chin that's going to keep him in every fight from here on out. And then he just takes over. He big brothered Jaime Munguia, like you talked about, like before in the lead up. And then he big brothered him in the ring, knocks him down, and just really had nothing really, wasn't too worried. Like he even said afterwards, Chris, like, I saw every punch that was coming. He's really slow. Like, he's a hell of a nice kid, but I saw every punch that was coming. He's really slow. I figured him out by the third or fourth round. I thought Canelo looked great. I thought he answered a lot of questions. Fun fight, too. Munguia brought his A game. Fun fight. Like we said, fun fight. I was satisfied.
It lived up to everything we expected in terms of, you know, what the fight would be. It was exciting. We got knockdowns. We got a lot of rounds. Munguia brought it. The guy has its gas tank. But in terms of answering the question about Canelo, did he get old overnight? Absolutely not. And if he is aging, he's aging like fine wine. Because that's what a veteran performance looks like. It was incredible. Everything you said, Dan, I'm echoing in terms of, you know, analyzing what's coming at him, seeing what's going, and just being smart. Not wasting energy. It's such a veteran kind of old man tactic to just be like, all right, I'm not gonna. You know, back in the day, I would have done this. I would have stepped on the gas here, but nah, I'll just take a walk around the ring a little bit, and I'll just do. You know, because he had opportunities to finish Munguia, and I think again, Canelo from a few years ago would have. But I'm changing my thought process now on that. I don't think it's that he's old manning it in a bad way. I think he's old manning it in a good way. He's right. Being just smart, and he's not wasting anything. He's being efficient. Wildly efficient fighter. And that's why that idea for Munguia that, oh, we're going to get him in the second half when he tires out. It's like, yeah, but good luck tiring out that guy who's in absolute control of everything that's going on in the ring. And that's the thing I always talk about, people who've never fought or been in a ring or really even sparred high level. When you're in control of the pace, it is much easier to keep your gas tank full. When you are chasing someone, you get tired way faster. When you're not in control, that anxiety that comes with not being able to be in control and having to have to react saps your gas tank way faster. That's what we saw. Munguia was tired. Munguia got outworked. And that's, that just speaks to the ring generalship, which is something that's often overlooked from Canelo Alvarez. But that's, you know, that's something that comes with experience. And nobody in the sport has more experience than Canelo Alvarez at this point.
He still hits really hard.
Yes.
I mean, he dropped Munguia. That uppercut was awesome. Nasty. Like that will go into his highlight reel. Like that was some like
in combination too. Hook to the right hand, boom, bang.
Right, and he threw another punch after. Like he was talking about flow state. He was in a nice little flow state right there where he dropped him with the second punch of that three punch combination right on the money. Dropped Munguia like a ton of bricks, like out of nowhere. You know, I had
and maybe he caught Munguia actually going into the punch because he used the hook and Munguia was trying to go underneath that and just rocked right into that uppercut.
Right, you could have had a 3-0 Munguia. I think I had a 2-1 Munguia. There was a lot of momentum on the side of Munguia. He was fighting the fight of his life. He was jabbing. He looked huge. He was jabbing. He was landing power shots and getting out of the pocket, which has not been the case for him in his career. That's when he gets in troubles, when he lingers in the pocket. And Canelo, just in the fourth round, just showed you why, and then just momentum took over. Thought he tired out a little bit in the 8th and 9th and 10th. Did finish strong. Munguia just didn't have it from that point on. Guy still has it. And not only that, he threw more punches than he usually does. He averaged 45 punches thrown around. Usually he's in the high 30s. I think that's because of Munguia. pushing the pace a little bit, but he landed 50% of his power shots. And if you land close to 50%, you're going to win the fight. But that just
usually, when you're getting close to 50%, you're in stoppage area.
Right, he could have got the stoppage. I know some people were like, "Oh, he should have got the stoppage," or like he was taking it easy on him. No, he was not taking it easy on him. He was, you know, he landed 50 body shots, and that's the most ever landed by Canelo on one of his opponents. So he's doing it in different ways. Like you said, veteran performance, absolutely, but not like a veteran performance of a guy that like, oh, he's towards the end. No, like I actually think he's the best 168 pounder in the world because Benavidez is at 175. And I also think after watching that he could potentially beat David Benavidez. It's a hot button question.
I know my other broadcast partners are like, you know, Benavidez is going to kill. I'm like, I'm always pushing back. Like, I don't think so, man. You guys are really underestimating the skill set and the knowledge and the experience, everything we're talking about of Canelo. And dude, he's got that power still. He's not losing that power or that ability to pull the trigger. So he's a super dangerous guy. For anyone in the world, David Benavidez included.
That's the question. That's the big question. That's what we'll go to next. The version that we've now seen of Canelo Alvarez versus what we've seen of David Benavidez. It's the question that we have to ask. Can Canelo Alvarez beat David Benavidez if they were to fight next?
Yeah. I think that was my point. I've been saying that. It's very possible. I'm not saying he's going to beat him. I'm saying you asked me if he can beat him. Absolutely. Because I know a lot of people out there are like, he can't beat him. So many, I've talked to so many people, even people in the know, and they're like, David Benavidez is definitely going to be Canelo. Canelo has no chance. I'm like, nah, you're no way, dude. You cannot just completely disregard Canelo Alvarez. He's Canelo Alvarez. I think when guys are on the guys like Canelo who are around for so long, I think it just becomes easy to kind of bash him a little bit and be like, you know, he didn't fight this game, that guy. You know, and in hindsight, we're all going to look back and be like, man, remember the Canelo Alvarez era? That was some fun times. It was some great fights. He was a great fighter. I think a lot of people may be taking some shots personally about him. But, I mean, it is what it is. The guy is super talented. And, yes, he does have the opportunity, or there does have the chance to be even much younger, bigger David Benavidez. Because, dude, the guy is just so highly skilled.
Well, there's a lot of reasons why I think he can – beat David Benavidez. Number one, I think it's a 60-40 fight for Canelo Alvarez. I do rate David Benavidez. I do see some of the comments that I've been getting over the last 24 hours that say that Benavidez and Munguia are the same type of fighter. They're the same level. No, they're not. Benavidez is better than Jaime Munguia. David Benavidez has a bit higher motor than Jaime Munguia. He throws more punches. He has a higher accuracy. He has better defensive metrics. Yes, I understand. You want to go by opponents. Benavidez has a pretty good resume as well. Like, you're just kind of writing him off, and you're just kind of being disrespectful to David Benavidez. He's very good. He's very young. He's better than Munguia. That being said, Canelo Alvarez should be the favorite in a fight with David Benavidez. The reason I think he can hang with Benavidez, the younger guy, the ferocious puncher of Benavidez, is because Canelo's chin. Canelo's chin is going to keep him in almost any fight for the rest of his career. Not only that, we talked about the big level experience. Canelo being able to slow down the pace. Canelo being able to throw 40 to 45 punches. Still having that power. Still having a very good jab. Still having very good defense. His head movement wasn't as good against Munguia in this last fight, but I expect it to be against Benavidez. I saw a lot of things from Canelo that showed me, you know what, we should not be writing this guy off. You know what, it's not a foregone conclusion that David Benavidez is just going to wipe the floor with him. In fact, you know, I think that Canelo would be a slight favorite. Not only that, I just want to see it. Like, now, like, after these two fights for Canelo, these two wins, you know, the Charlo one, whatever, he's got back, he's healthy, and now this win over Munguia, like, okay, now is the time. Like, there's momentum. Like, Canelo is still good. Benavidez is at the top or entering his prime. This is the fight that has to be made. I'm not optimistic it gets made in September, but, you know, it's not out of the question that it happens 1 year from now.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And I think we need to touch on what we actually spoke about over the weekend. Like, this Canelo Alvarez era is coming to a close. Like, how many more of these
five fights?
Is it going to be that many?
He said all week long, he said, I feel fine. I feel like I'm in my prime. But he also did say in the same breath, I'm not going to let boxing retire me. I'm going to retire from boxing.
So that was what I was getting to. My point. Yeah, five. unless you start to feel like you can't be the top guy anymore. He's not going out. You know, I think we're getting from his personality that he's looking to go out on top. He's looking to go out, like you said, you know, retire. He's going to retire from the sport, not the other way around. So if he starts going out there in his next couple of fights, if he starts to struggle or has a hard time, I could see him packing in early, which is smart. And I would tip my hat to him for that and congratulate him for that. But we need to cherish these big fights. We need to get as big as they can now. And that's why I think David Benavidez fight next is the best idea. Because, dude, he's not getting younger. His chance to fight at a high level against a guy like David Benavidez, who's, I think, number two in the world for, you know, in that weight class for 68, even though he's fighting at 75 this next fight. The time to do that's now. Let's make that fight immediately. I think the longer you wait, the less of a chance Canelo has to win that fight. It only aids the younger, maturing Benavidez, who's been looking fantastic lately and getting better every time out. You mentioned, you know, he's fought some good guys, but it's not just that he's fought some good guys and beat them. It's what he does to them. He is dominating guys. I mean, that Demetrius Andrade is a nightmare for everybody, and he had nothing for David Benavidez. Caleb Plant is a nightmare for everybody, and David just outmotored him and just put the pressure, you know, almost stopped him. He probably could have, you know, he had opportunities to. David Benavidez is a monster. That's why his nickname is that. And I think the time to make the fight's now, as soon as possible. Because
definitely.
Otherwise, the older Canelo gets, the less that fight's ever going to happen. And I don't blame him, you know, at this point. But that's the fight to happen, and it should be happening now, because we're not getting too many more of these big Canelo Alvarez weekends. You know, we're looking at 2 years, maybe three.
2 years, which would be two fights each, four or five fights. There's not a lot of big names out there. Edgar Berlanga was in Las Vegas, and he was telling anyone in earshot that he's getting Canelo next. I would not be shocked if that's the fight next.
That's like
Canelo. Right. There's a Jermall Charlo lingering around, even though he has zero momentum. There's not many names at 168. Benavidez going to 175. I don't know why he did that, to be honest. I thought it was a pretty badass move in the moment.
Yeah.
But like, why put any type of, not pressure, but like, keep the pressure on Canelo. Stay at 168. Why give Canelo any out to not want to fight Benavidez, to say, oh, he's at 175. Who knows what could happen there? Maybe he won't go back down to 160. Not to mention, just going back down, that's 7 pounds. That's a lot. I understand he has better, more money now in Benavidez. He can put more money into his nutrition, and he's doing better with the weight. The 175 move, I guess he doesn't want to sit around and wait, and he wants to, you know, take it into his own hands. But I think that if he could still make 168, there's still fights with Morel. There's fights out there for Benavidez. To do that, but I wholeheartedly agree that you got to do this now. Canelo basically said after the fight, he's like, it's money. The money's right. I will fight Benavidez. It's just coming down to money, which it always comes down to in this sport. Is he going to get the 200 million?
But Dan,
no, he's not going to get the 200 million.
But Dan, do you blame Canelo where he's at?
No.
If you really think about it, it's like he's won every title he can have. He's you know, undisputed in a really tough weight class, although there's guys in the weight class that he needs to fight in order to maintain that. But you know, all these big fights over the years, he's in the twilight. He wants to make as much money as humanly possible. I can't knock him for that. But, you know, if the fight does happen and he gets that $150 million, you're like, oh, we're going to be tipping our hat and be like, well, that was a smart move on his part.
150 is crazy, though. I mean, 150 is like, that's Mayweather Pacquiao territory when you bring in 4.6 or 4.4 million buys. Like, maybe, yeah, but, you know, 50 million.
You saw Canelo this week. He thinks he's above all of those guys, and he's got the air about him. Like, listen,
his aura is wild. When I was in that room, so like, yes, to bring you into that room, like, we were down below the MGM Grand in like a studio, and we're all in there, me, Lampley, some other media people. And when he walked in the room, it was like
there's a wave of presence.
Yeah,
he comes,
it's crazy,
you feel him coming before he gets there.
Yeah, like, it was nuts.
He's got his own orbit. And
it was so cool. He could have been any cooler.
The people satelliting around him at all times, you know. Bodyguards, the media, and people literally get giddy about it around them. And I'm talking like seasoned media people are like literally like ear to ear smiling and like jumping up and down to see him. It's wild.
And he's cool now. He's got a great disposition. He roasted me. I loved it. Like, he just got an air about
him. It's so funny. He's such a quick counter puncher, but he's also such a quick counter talker. Like,
bro, the man learned the word drip. The man learned the word drip, and then 3 seconds later,
he turned it on you.
Turned it on me. And I was like, I just got pieced up. Yeah. I just got Jaime Munguia'd by Canelo.
The two best counters I've ever seen from Canelo, one was when Caleb Plant tried to smack him and he pulled back and whacked him. Yeah. Number two was when he smoked you on the roast.
Bro, 10-8 round for Canelo, and I loved every freaking minute of it. It was one of the cooler experiences of my career. Was chopping up with Canelo. I think we're best friends. I mean, I think we're best friends.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't expect a text back, but you should try.
I'm, you know what I'm trying to do? You know me, like I'm always looking for the next, how can I outdo this? How can I bring it back? I want to go up to Big Bear. Like I have his assistant's number. I'm going to send her the clip. I'm going to be like, listen, like this is now 2 super viral videos in a row. Like, come on, let's go up to Big Bear. We'll get our boy Mitch, our producer. We'll shoot some crazy content with Canelo. Like, we'll cook. We'll go shopping for real drip. Go in his car. We'll play golf. We'll go horseback riding. Is that a little too much?
Yeah, dude. None of that's happening.
Well, that's on me, bro. I dream big. Damn it.
Listen, like I said, go text them. Don't expect to text back.
I won't text him.
Try everything possible. I'm just don't.
I won't text him. I'll text the woman in the glasses who was laughing her ass off during our interview, and she's in the back of all the interviews now. And she was like, "That was funny." Like when I walked out of there, she's like, "That was good. Job well done. Let's go eat some steak."
But it's good for him because that is so endearing to fans. Like when you see someone like him, who you know he has his air about him for sure. He's a fighter. He has to. He's got to have his aura and that machismo and cockiness, but also he's a nice, funny guy. He's lighthearted. The human aspect of that, like when you did the Devin Haney, top five, whatever, and it endears you to him. You see them not just being the tough guy. It's like, oh, these are real people too. And people love that kind of connection that you can make with a fighter. So it's really good for him and his brand as well to have content out there like that.
Yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to show you these guys are human.
Did you see what I did there? I just help Dan.
That's good.
He's going to use that clip now. Is why they should actually make this stuff.
Right. This is going to happen. I'm telling you, we're going to end up at Big Bear. But I love humanizing these guys. Like you guys are interesting people. You're more than just boxers. You are, a dad. Canelo's a dad. Devin Haney's a friend. Like mm-hmm. He's a good. These are funny dudes. I get to see it.
Well, you saw it in me early on. That's why you have me on your show so damn much, and eventually. Had me join the crew. So.
Join the crew. That's how we'll end the show. This is episode 300 of Inside Boxing Live. That's
big
unbelievable.
Deal.
That's an unbelievable thing. Thank you. Thank you. Thank
congratulations,
you.
Congratulations.
Crazy.
Now it's time for Dan to get his flowers.
300 episodes of Inside Boxing Live. I started this show in September of 2017, and I did it in a garage in Long Island with a microphone that I didn't even think worked. I didn't know what to do with my hands. I didn't know what to do. We did it live. It was not good.
Oof.
And I just stuck with it. And I got to thank my dad, who kept me on the straight and narrow, do it every single week. I got to thank my brother, Nick, who produces the show now, and who also produced show number one. And I just stuck with it every single week. I said, who knows what could happen with this. We did our 100th episode shortly after that. We did 200. We moved on to John Boy. I brought Chris Algieri on board. Now we're celebrating with PPV.com. We're going to big fights. We're bringing you some good analysis, which is what I think is good analysis. We're having fun along the way. 300 episodes flew by. It's absolutely crazy to think of that in 5 or 6-plus years. I think it's awesome to have you on board now. I think you've elevated the show in so many different ways. I just think we're having a great time, and I want to thank everyone out there who supported since day one. I want to thank people out there that have hopped on along the way, who hopped on now. It's not going to stop. We're going to have 300 more episodes. So thanks, everyone out there. I can't believe it. And I love doing this.
Joe Rogan Experience, we're coming for you.
Give me that 60 million Spotify money, damn it.
Yeah, no, the second episode we did, I was like, man, we're on to something. I said to you, I was like, yo, one day soon, you're not going to have to do anything else but this. And we took less than 2 years to make that reality. So... you know, listen, when you know something, when you got that feeling, something special, it's a cool experience to see it through.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. I'm very happy you're on board here at Inside Boxing Live. None of the sappy stuff anymore. I'm feeling weird now. Let's say something mean about each other. I'm going to go work out today.
Yeah, I'm going for a run after this. I had tacos for breakfast, so I need to. I
saw that. You had a freaking day yesterday, huh?
Yeah, man. I did a little Cinco de Mayo party. I love my Mexican fans, and in terms of, you know, boxing weekend, we had a Mexico versus Mexico in Vegas. You know, we got back, and I was like, let's do it up.
Yeah, these Vegas trips, man, are taking a toll on me.
They're rough.
Yesterday, I was a complete. I just laid on the couch and tired. It was also like 50 degrees here in New York and raining. I was actually pretty pumped about that. Ordered twice on Seamless, twice on Grubhub, which is just very loser status.
That's slovenly.
Yeah, I had ordered breakfast sandwich and lunch, and almost had ordered dinner too. I ordered two lunches to have later for dinner.
You deserve it. You deserve that, Dan.
Yeah, baby. 300 episodes.
I need one of those days. I haven't had one of those in a long time.
I needed it yesterday. I'm still feeling it today, but I'm going to go sign up at the gym here in Queens, New York, and start this journey, my fitness journey. Next, when you see me in September, keep your girls away from Instagram. That's all I'm going to say, guys.
Shred season.
Keep your ladies off Instagram. Come that September Canelo Berlanga fight weekend. Because the best thing you're going to see that weekend is going to be when I pop my top at the Wynn pool. We're going to the Wynn pool, by the way. We're not taking that picture at the park. No offense to the park, MGM.
I like
weird
park,
rooms.
Though. I like the park. Yeah, I like them. They're it's a kind of boutique-y feel. It's a little.
I like the no cigarettes. I like that there's not a lot of people in the lobby because the MGM Grand can get pretty.
I don't like MGM Grand, man. I've been there too long. I spent 2 months there with Danny Jacobs for camp.
Yeah, Vegas is tough. I'm next time we're going back June 15th, and lately I just go to the media hotel rate. And they give you the hotel, and I just click on that, and I do it. But I've heard from a few people that if you shop around, there are cheaper hotels, better hotels. So we could be moving up.
Moving on up.
Moving on up. Just like
every trip we have moved up.
It's crazy. I don't know how we're going to outdo last one. We went out to, you know, shout out to Barry's Prime. We went out to Barry's. After that Canelo interview, I could literally levitate back to my hotel room.
Guys, that was the first time Dan was ever taller than me because he was literally walking on air.
I was like, I'm best friends with Canelo. This video is going to go viral. ESPN's probably going to pick it up. I look at my phone. ESPN direct messages me. Hey, we would like to share your thing. Then we go to Barry's Prime. And then we go to some ridiculously VIP.
Poodle room. The VIP of VIP. The poodle
room. The VIP at freaking Fountain Blue that we couldn't even take pictures in. It was so VIP. The head coach of the Raiders, Antonio Pierce, was going there so he doesn't get bothered by fans. That was what we were doing this past weekend. Yeah, I sound like a douchebag right now, but it was an awesome weekend, and sometimes you need those weekends. So, awesome stuff, Chris. Great weekend of fights. We're going to keep this train rolling. We got Pro Box this week. We got top-ranked fights. We're going to have another episode at the end of the week to preview Lomachenko versus Kambosos and any other news that's happening in boxing. Toronto Davis had one hell of a press conference, got into the face of Frank Martin. We'll talk about that. Hates Devin Haney. We'll talk about that. There's a lot to talk about. Thank you, everyone, once again for joining this ride or being on this ride for 300 episodes. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. If you have a fitness regimen for me or if you have PEDs, send these to DMs.
Feel the rush. Live thoroughbred racing is happening now at Laurel Park, the Players Track. Every Friday through Sunday, the gates open at 11 a.m. and the action starts at noon. Free admission, fast-paced racing, and real wagering excitement from start to finish. Pick your horses, place your bets, chase the win. From live racing and simulcast action to great food, special events, and nonstop sports viewing, Laurel Park is where the action lives. Come, win, play. Visit LaurelPark.com.